making paper.
Welcome to episode 32 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Rachel Hazel, who divides her time between Edinburgh and the Isle of Iona in Scotland. I want to apologize for the audio quality of this episode. We had a few gremlins due to recording over the internet and across the miles, and I'm afraid that Rachel's voice sounds a bit stretchier than it really is at times. Rachel's website is The Traveling Bookbinder, and you'll soon hear why that is, as we discuss how she teaches five or so workshops in cities around the world each year. Venice, Iona, Paris, anyone? These sound absolutely delightful. I've seen photos of some of the book and paper shops she frequents. Rachel is perhaps the first book artist to offer an online class. You'll hear about her two popular courses, Paper Love and Book Love, as we chat about some of the advantages of taking an online class. And we talk about Rachel's brand new book, Bound, 15 Beautiful Bookbinding Projects. You'll hear about some of her favorite tools and papers, how she helps break down the barrier of facing a blank page, and her belief that everyone has a book inside of them. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Rachel Hazel, welcome to Paper Talk. It's so great to talk with you. I'm high up in the mountains in Colorado, and you are at sea level in Scotland. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm waving from Iona.
Iona, yes. Tell me a little bit about Iona, and I think you live in Edinburgh part of the time. I know Iona has quite a history.
It certainly does, yes. So, yeah, Edinburgh is a great centre of learning and paper production, but papers, you know, pamphlets, manuscripts, learning, newspapers, all that stuff. And then Iona is probably where the Book of Kells was created when Columba was excommunicated or left Ireland. He settled here, and I love knowing that there was scriptorium on the island all that time ago, and people spending a long time making beautiful pieces of work on paper.
Right. Yeah. So tell me about your childhood. I think you grew up near a paper mill or something. Right.
Did That's I read right. That? Yes. I grew up in Somerset in the southwest of England. And at the bottom of our garden, there was a river, the lower River Axe, which we used to spend our summers in with buckets and, welly boots. We used to fill up our boots with water so that we got the sensation of being in the water, but without hurting our feet on the rocks. And we'd wander up and down stream, but we never wandered quite as far as Wookie Hole Paper Mill, which is where my favorite papers are made today. They keep making.
I visited Wookie Hole maybe 5 years ago.
Oh, brilliant!
They were having a huge paper making mold sale, so they were selling their old molds and decals. And I brought a couple home, so I have a couple.
Amazing! How did you manage that?
It was
explaining
tricky.
To customs. Yeah.
I had to borrow packing material at Wookie Hole, and it worked out, thankfully.
Fantastic.
Just wanted to move forward in your life to how you got interested in books and paper.
So I studied literature at Edinburgh University. So that's what took me to Scotland. And 3/4 of the way through the degree, I became aware of what I was holding in my hands as much as what I was reading. And I'd smell the paper and turn the pages and love books on the shelf. And so I'd had to go to, my parents wanted me to go to university instead of going to art college, which I would have preferred. But I ended up choosing at the end of my English degree to go and study how to make books. And my stepfather had seen an ad in the paper for a local bookbinder who was teaching paper marbling on one day and bookbinding on the other day of a weekend. And I went and made my first book and knew that I was going to be a bookbinder for the rest of my life.
Wow. And what was your parents' response to that, I wonder?
So sadly, by that point, both my parents had died. Mm. So I didn't get a chance to... I think my father would have loved the repetitive element of bookbinding and the kind of controlling and putting things in order and containing things, ideas. And my mother would have loved the joy of traveling around the world and teaching and spreading the book love with people.
Oh, that's sweet. So that's a nice segue into your title, The Traveling Bookbinder. So how did, you're really an entrepreneur, I think. And how, I mean, you probably think so too. That was silly. But how did that idea come about? And talk about The Traveling Bookbinder.
Okay. No, I've never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. That's hilarious. I like it though. I'll try and live into it. it started off, I'd been teaching in different places all around the place for quite a long time. But in 2012, I decided that I was going to teach a different workshop in a different place every month and, you know, go all around the world. So I started off in the UK, and in February I taught in Napa Valley and carried on different places until I finished in December in Paris. And oh my goodness, I was exhausted, and I loved meeting everybody. I loved teaching the workshops, just a bit in between of working out, did I have enough people for that workshop in 3 months' time, and how am I going to get the paper from here to there? And all of that stuff was really challenging. So, but I still love doing it. But this is going to segue into some other thing. I realized that the way to reach more people would be to create an online class, and so that's how that began.
Okay, and let me just stop you there and ask you to describe sort of the content of your work, those workshops you were teaching.
Okay, so each workshops in each of the 12 places had a different theme, because I love to make so it's not as if you could do this particular workshop anywhere. I want it to be site specific. So, so I teach a workshop here on Iona in March, and we use driftwood that you find on the beach, and I send you out to go and collect pebbles or shells, and we go and visit the library in the Iona in the Abbey, and so you're responding and documenting and engaging with a particular place rather than learning something in a neutral space. So it's a combination of, it's bookbinding, but it's more than that. So it's book art, but also I hope that people transform themselves or have a transformative experience when they come on a workshop. So they make a book, but that's just one part of it. It's the experience of being in the place, being with the other people who are also engaged and delighting in the environment, and seeing what happens with the weather or particular circumstances, and all these things combine with cake as well, of course, to make a unique, I hope, experience.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they are unique, and I know people that have joined you, so I've heard that they are unique experiences. That's wonderful. And so when you began teaching online, I'm not sure there were that many online classes. So this 2013, 14, something like that, especially in books and paper. So did you have a model, or how did you sort of proceed?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe now that there weren't that many classes like this around. I was very lucky to meet Beth Kempton of Do What You Love, who had created one or two online classes, and she was being a stationery addict, she was very keen to do a paper love workshop. And so I had the incredible support of a brilliant producer, very high value, very, like paper love is very, very full. I see other e-courses which are, seem a little bit one-dimensional in comparison. And so I'm very proud of how it turned out and how it continues to reach people and spread the paper love word, you know, people connecting together online. You can have a community who are sharing what they're doing, even wherever they are in the world, as long as they can chat and share what they're doing and share their discoveries and talk about different places that they're about to visit. Or they even send each other mail art and postcards, and that's brilliant.
Yeah. Is that something that you prompt, or did that just kind of develop?
It seems to evolve. I don't initiate how to share, disseminate and exhibit your work if you want. And people do that on lots of different levels. And I love that as well. They carry on. It's not just something that stops when the course finishes. They carry on.
Yeah, I teach online and in person as well. And I do find there's some really wonderful things about both. I mean, obviously being face-to-face is, there's nothing like that. But I really think online, you have more time in between things sometimes, or yeah, you can connect with people you would never meet otherwise. What other aspects do you find that are beneficial of online classes?
Love the links. I mean, I don't know if this is beneficial or not, because I know that you know, you get lost down a rabbit hole of, oh, look at this person doing this. Oh, my goodness. And then they're exhibiting here. And, oh, my goodness, there's this gallery that deals solely in paper cutting. Or I love those connections that just unroll and unfold off into the distance in different ways than you could ever have expected. Yeah, yeah. And the power of it, the power of being able to learn and being able to be curious about so many different things that just through your screen is fantastic.
Right. And tell me a little bit about the difference between, I know you have two main online classes, Book Love and Paper Love. What's the difference between them?
Okay, so Paper Love was the first one, and that's the 5 weeks. Of, it's like a foundation course in everything to do with paper. So we look at paper making, how, you know, how it's made, the history of paper, and then each week has a different theme. So there's collage and words and books and mail. And so we go into a lot of detail in each week and play with different ideas stimulated by those themes. Whereas, and each week you make a main project which encompasses everything you learn in that week. Then Book Love was able to go a bit deeper, I think. So it's a 2 week course, and you concentrate on creating two projects, two books from start to finish. So you have an idea, a little bit of writing, and then you design it, and then you bind it, then you know get the words on the page. And so it's the whole thing from concept to completion. And I think that's an incredible thing to be able to do, especially when people say, oh, I don't write. I can't do that. I'm not an author. Well, actually, you know, try this little exercise and you'll be surprised what comes up and how pleased and proud you'll be when you present this book as a present to somebody, or just have it for yourself, that you've made the whole thing from start to finish.
Right. And I think you have an upcoming Paper Love class, is that right? And is that the same? Is it a little different, a short one this time?
Or am I don't think so. The next class that's going to run is Book Love.
Oh, Book Love.
In January. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. So Book Love. And how do people find out about that?
So if you go to my website, thetravelingbookbinder.com, and for you Americans out there, I spell traveling with two L's, not one. You can subscribe to my newsletter and be the first to hear about upcoming workshops and classes which are coming in the pipeline ahead. I've got new workshops planned for next year, which I'm excited to tell people about when it's ready.
Awesome. And you still do a few on-location workshops. Like, I know you were in Venice recently. You still do something in Iona, I believe. So, yeah, just describe that briefly and tell me about a couple of favorite paper places in one of those cities.
Mm-hmm. So, generally, I teach 5 workshops a year in different places, starting in Iona, on Iona in March, and going to Shetland in April, then there's a new course which I can't quite mention, which is going to happen in September. And then this year I was teaching in Venice in October. I have also taught in Amsterdam. And then I tend to end the year, because it's so fantastic, to finish in Paris in November, where the city's all bright and sparkly and getting ready for Christmas. And it's magical just walking through the streets. And I've been there so many times that I know different places to go. So I would recommend, in Paris, there's one very papery street, which is the Rue Pont Louis Philippe. And there are 3 paper shops there. One is a calligraphy shop called Melody Graphique. And there are beautiful examples of lettering up behind the counter. And they sell papers and inks and dip pens. And you can see up, my top tip for there is to look up above the bookshelf on the back of the shop. And there are all these leather-bound ledgers where different people have tried out the pens. So they hand bind these books for you to try out the pens. So there are funny squiggles and drawings and people signing their names. And I love to think that they're all stored there, right, out of the way. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here. And I want to tell you about my upcoming online class called Weave Through Winter. In the Weave Through Winter classroom, we'll be creating a daily practice as we explore a variety of papers and weaving techniques. Commit to 30 minutes of creativity a day, more or less. Challenge yourself to share what you create. There will be prizes. Stimulate your mind by finding, mixing, and matching papers, and find satisfaction in the ordinary while creating something extraordinary. Class begins on January 16th, 2019, and you can read all about it and register at HelenHebertStudio.com. Just click on Workshops. Now back to the episode.
Well, I want to congratulate you on your new book called Bound, and it's filled with 15 beautiful bookbinding projects, and it's published by Kyle Books, and I'm interested in how that book came about.
I'm astounded. I can hardly believe that it's come into being, and I'm so delighted with it, so thank you. Last March, I had an email from the commissioning editor asking in the book about bookbinding. It took about 30 seconds because I've always wanted to produce a book, and I feel that everybody has a book inside them, and to spread the word a bit further about how brilliant it is to make your own books. So that was the writing of it was the easiest part of the book. The hardest part was persuading the publishers or deciding what the proposal was going to be. Coming up with a very elaborate ideas about how you make each book and then you fill them. And I had suggestions about how you do that, because in-person workshops are not just about bonding; they're about filling the pages with your own stories and your own content. But the publishers wanted it to be more accessible and So I came up with the idea of having these blank books, but personalised and embellished with watercolour patterns and people making them unique that way.
Right. There is definitely a negotiation that goes into writing books. I write books too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, satisfying the publisher, that they're going to feel comfortable that they'll be able to sell it to a broad audience. And yeah, at the same time, getting what you want to get in there.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I'm already delighted at the different responses that I've had from all around the world of people dipping into it and experimenting. And maybe even if they've done quite a lot of these things before, there's a couple of structures that they might not have heard of or they approached in a different way. So that's really exciting to see that.
Yeah, that is. And I want to talk a little bit about the photography, because the photographs are so beautiful in the book, and the photographer came to Iona, I think, and maybe lives there, you'll tell me. And I think, does she do some photography for you already, or your photos on your blog and publications are so gorgeous as well. I'm just curious if you have the same sensitivity to photography or if it's the same person.
Oh, thank you. You flatter me. Thank you. I completely lucked out with the photographer for the book. Susan Bell does a lot of cookery books normally, and I think you can really tell that when you realise that how she's styled the projects in Bound. Mm-hmm. The publishers were brilliant at giving me a choice of who to work with, the designer and also the photographer. And so I looked at various different things. And Susan actually is Scottish, but she lives down in the southwest in Sussex. And she very astutely realised that to make the book special, it would need to be photographed on Iona as well. Mm. Because, you know, there are lots of books about bookbinding. Why is this one special? And I think that her photographs make it that way, and that they really reflect how, you know, a big part of my life that's here. Yeah, so we came up in February and it was very difficult to get back because there was so much snow, and so we were on the beach trying to make it look as if it was any time of year. I was kind of taking my gloves off at the last minute and then walking along, and we had a lovely time. And she was really brilliant at putting the images together. So there's one of my favorite combinations is there's one of the inky patterns is a kind of loopy a loopy linked pattern, and she took a picture of seaweed caught in a fence, which just goes together so perfectly. And I love that.
Yeah, when you're immersed in a project, things start to look like what you're working on, and the creativity comes together in so many fascinating ways. That's cool. Mm. You mentioned the inquiry, and I love there's a whole section on, I think it's called inquiry. That's not a word that I use or we use, but I love it. Maybe it's your word. I don't know. But talk a little bit about that. You said, I think you had an aversion to drawing or something. And I love these little just exercises that you have to get people into making marks with ink.
Yes, absolutely. Because I think a blank page is a very intimidating thing. Mm-hmm. And yes, even though I'm an artist and have been doing this for a long time, I still am terrified if I had to draw a horse or draw something to scale or something, I'd be absolutely terrified. And the pleasure of just dipping, it doesn't even need to be a pen, dipping a stick into ink and seeing what happens and spreading the marks around and seeing how it changes if you add water or if you use a different fluffier brush or whatever, it's just fantastic. And so one of the prompts or suggestions in Bound in the inquiry section is to just write the alphabet with, don't take your brush off the page, just keep writing and join all the letters together so that it makes a kind of pattern, mm-hmm. which has some kind of sense to it, but it creates something, you know, your handwriting is unique to you. And so that's going to be really particular and precious.
Right. Wonderful. Talk about a little about some of your favorite bookbinding tools. I know you go over tools and materials in the book, and do you have a couple of special tools?
I have a very, it's not a unique one, but a lovely guy called Alan here on Iona makes an awl for me. And he embeds a bookbinding needle into a little piece of oak, which is shaped so that it fits really beautifully in your hand and has a little copper ring to, you know, secure it. And I love that for just it just being just the right size for sitting in the hand and making the right size hole for sewing. Because, you know, some awls, they're too big. That, you know, you don't want too big a hole. You just want just the right size hole. So that makes me very happy. Yeah. And another hole making device, which I'm very keen on, is the Japanese screw punch. That's such a beautiful design. It's such a kind of slick piece of engineering that's very pleasurable and works like a dream every time.
Yeah. And where do you get that in the UK? I'm just curious, because there aren't very many places to find those.
No, and they're very expensive. I mean, I know that I realize it's an investment, but I think it's worth it if you're going to be making holes, yeah. making books. So I use the main book binding suppliers in the UK is Hewitt's, and I'll give you the address after so you can put it in the notes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
They supply all sorts of book binding things, from headbands to greyboard to six for headbands and. Yeah.
And on the note of the handmade awl, I don't know if you know of Jim Croft in the United States. He makes awls out of deer and elk bone. He lives out in the country in Idaho. And I just saw him recently. I didn't see him wearing this, but he has a vest with pockets in it. And that's his store. You can shop and buy bone folders. He makes the bone folders out of deer and elk bones, and then he makes awls also.
Lovely. It's really special. I mean, everybody's so, your pencil case is such a, your toolbox is such a precious and personal thing, and it's lovely to have tools that are made by somebody who, rather than by machine, or that are the same as everybody else's. Yeah.
Right. And since this podcast is called Paper Talk, we can't not talk about paper a little bit. So tell me about some of the papers you recommend to your students, both commercial, but also I'm guessing that you find papers and maps, and I've seen pictures of old maps and other kinds.
Yes. Okay, so commercial paper, surprise, surprise, is made along in the mill down the river from where I grew up. And there are two different papers that I love. There's a watercolour paper called Bockingford, which is, it's partly cotton, partly wood pulp, and it's got cut edges, but it just takes paint and watercolour so beautifully. Mm-hmm. So I use that a lot. But my absolute favourite is Somerset Velvet, which is actually a printmaking paper. So I kind of cheat with it because I rarely do printmaking these days. And it's 100% cotton rag. It's made to look as if it's a handmade paper, but it's a mould-made paper. And it comes in very, very big sheets. And it's got such a lot of cotton in it that it wears beautifully. So the more you use it, the softer it gets. And I love that. So found papers, even though I'm not a brilliant sailor, I love charts, sea charts, so much that I'll go to great lengths to get them. So when I was artist in residence on the Royal Navy ship Endurance in Antarctica, quite a long time ago, And so, of course, I made friends with a surveyor up on the bridge. Because sea charts go out of date very quickly, and so they don't want to just be thrown away. They need the opportunity to be recycled and made into new things. And they're very lovely, thick stock. They unfold really well. So yes, maps.
Awesome. And your writing style in the book, I like how you come across very personable and witty, saying that you thread a needle the same way I do, by the way, by pulling the thread between your teeth to flatten it. Probably a lot of people do that. But then you say, don't tell the dentist. I love it. And I love this thing. You mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to say it again. You say that you believe everybody has a book inside of them in whatever form it takes, and you're committed to getting these books out. So I just wondered if you had an example you could share of a book that came out of someone or out of yourself, just a story from beginning to end of a book or the process or...
Rather than a specific example of a book, it was somebody who's just came to Venice and also came to a workshop in Amsterdam, and she says that I opened up her creative tap, you know, I turned her tap back on. Aww. And that, I love the thought of the flow of creativity just bursting forth, and to what an honor it is to be able to try and turn on that creativity, because I don't know how people live without it. You know, there are so many ways to be creative that there's no excuses to not.
Yeah, that's a beautiful phrase, turning on the creative tap. And I think it is sad that so many people, even my own child, tells me he's not creative. And I'm like, you're crazy. So yeah. Society somehow shuts that off in us. And how wonderful that she said that. Mm. And I forgot to ask you, the workshops that you do in person, so they're quite small and intimate. What's the number of participants?
They can go between 4 and 6 people.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Because that's a nice number to have around the table. And if we're in a city, then it's not too big a group to gallivant across bridges and around little tiny places. Mm-hmm. I teach one-to-one. If somebody has got the money and inclination, then I love that too, because you can really concentrate and focus on a particular project.
Right. Do you have so I think all of the books, the projects in the book, are structures that are not necessarily your own, but you've turned them into beautiful books. And do you have a favorite structure, or just talk about one of them?
I love the flip-flap tab book, which indeed, yeah, none of the structures are mine. I've been doing this business for 20 years, and I've been to as many workshops as I can to keep learning, and I love that that's still possible. And so this one was taught to me by Christina Balbiana Daramengo. I keep getting her name muddled up. Christina Balbiana Daramengo, who learned it from somebody else. And it's so simple. It's just a cut out tab, two tabs cut out and slits, and it slots together, so you don't need any glue, you don't need any needle or thread. And I love the very structure creates windows for you to play with the, you know, depth and layers through the book, through the pages of the book, which is why books are so magic anyway. You know that a painting is just a two-dimensional thing, and that you have to have you know, there's this movement and narrative in a book, and so this flip-flap tab book creates curiosity looking through the windows before you've even begun.
Great. And I love, there's a little section in the back of the book with diagrams for how to do all of the structures. I think that's really handy. Like after you've worked through and kind of know how to make a book, you could almost refer to those diagrams.
Yes.
Rather than having to go back and read the whole thing. So that's really handy.
Absolutely. I'm so proud of how the book looks, you know, thank you for the commenting on the quality of the photographs and everything, but it still had to work, and that was very important to me, that the instructions actually did, you know, get you to end up with a book. And so it was important to have diagrams to clarify what you couldn't, it was not that easy to show in a photograph.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and so where can we find this book?
You can find this book all over the place. Amazon is doing great business, sending it out and about all around the place, and many independent bookshops are stocking it as well. I've been so chuffed to see pictures of it in bookshops from the States to Australia to New Zealand and France and Germany. It's just incredible. So, yes. If it's not in your local bookshop, please ask for it.
Yeah, you can absolutely do that, and bookstores can order it for you. Mm. Yeah, and we'll put a picture of Rachel with the book in the show notes. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I want to wrap up and end with something, an interest we both share, I think, in swimming. I've seen you post pictures of swimming pools in Paris or wherever. So tell me about do you swim frequently, or is it just like a specialty thing, and maybe a favorite pool?
I love being in water, whether that's having a bath every day or getting out into the open sea. I'm so lucky to live on this island for maybe a quarter of the year, and I don't really care what the temperature is. If the water's still and calm, then I'll go in, and it's so invigorating pretty much year round. But I love doing laps in a pool as well. Yeah.
So you'll do the polar bear plunge. Will you do that?
I shall be swimming at New Year, definitely. Yes, I've got a friend from the Outdoor Swim Society who's coming back up. Yes, so no excuses. We'll have our thermos flasks at the ready. Yeah, how about you?
I went swimming this morning. So I started swimming in college. I did nothing as a child. And in college I started, and I swam on the swim team, but I wasn't really good or anything. But I really fell in love with it. And so this morning I swim here 3 mornings a week with a group, and there was, it snowed last night. There were about 6 inches of snow on the ground.
No way.
I swim outside. But the area, the deck around the pool is heated stone. So there's no snow. You don't have to run out on the snow. It's a little bit,
that's very civilized.
But then the water's warm enough. It's chilly when you get in, but yeah.
I swear that swimming outside makes your eyes sparkle.
Okay.
It's so good for you.
Great. Well, thank you, Rachel. It's been so great to get to know you, and I hope to meet you one day in person.
And, me too, you.
You sign your newsletters and your emails with a cute little, what do you say, signature, a cute little phrase. So let's sign off with that.
Okay. Thanks so much. Best and bookiest.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.
There's a reason besides the season, the making paper.